My name is Mary Weaver, and I want to thank you for listening to this live presentation, The 10 Biggest Fat Loss and Fitness Mistakes Women Make and How to Correct Them. I'm a body transformation coach and an NSCA certified strength and conditioning specialist. My focus is helping women over 40 achieve their health and fitness goals. To learn more about fat loss, fitness, and the programs I offer, I hope you'll visit me at primefitnessforwomen.com, bodytransformationbootcamp.com, or facebook.com/primefit. Enjoy the presentation. You know what I'm talking about back fat? You know, it used to always just go straight to the butt, and it's like, what's with this stuff back here? So it shows up in strange new places. That is hormonal. It doesn't mean that you can't lose it. It's just that when you deposit it, it goes into different, exciting new places. And it seems like it is harder to lose weight than when you were younger. And it seems like your metabolism is slower than it was. You know, it used to be you could just drop it, you know, and now it's not really working like that. And at the same time, we've got information overload. We hear experts everywhere we look. You know, the magazine covers at the checkout, and we've got Dr. Oz, who I have a terrible allergic reaction to. And you've got people saying, don't eat this. This is what's really making you fat. No, no, don't eat that. It's this other thing. Or it's this other factor. Or it's food combining. You know, they have all these theories and all these crazy ideas to offer, so we get very confused. It is hard to know who is telling you the truth, something that's actually based on research, and who is just flogging his or her own method. And despite the fact that we're swimming in the sea of information, 65% of us are overweight or obese in this nation. If you ever want to see something truly shocking and amazing, Google Centers for Disease Control obesity slideshow. And some of you have seen this, I think. And you'll go to the Centers for Disease Control website, and what you see is a map of the United States, and it's color-coded, and it starts, I think, about 1980. Might be the late 70s. But anyway, it starts, you know, 25, 30 years ago, and it changes in color every year as you see the progression of the rate of overweight to obesity in the United States. And because the colors change from like light blue to medium blue, dark blue, pale yellow, yellow, orange, red, it just is astonishing. The slides flash by and you see how fast this has happened for us. It is shocking. It's really, truly mind-blowing. So go and look at that. So obviously what we're doing is not working, and it's not I don't mean to suggest ever, you know, it's your fault if you're overweight, because it's not as simple as that. There are a lot of factors, including the obesogenic environment we talked about. We are human. We eat more when we're with other people. We are programmed by evolution to eat when there is food available, because a person who has access to food and eats, I mean, think about it. Hundreds of years ago, thousands of years ago, when there were many more famines than there are now, it is an adaptation to eat more when food is available and to be able to store a little fat. That person would live in a famine. Skinny person will not live. So this is our biological destiny, that we are programmed to want to eat. Okay, so now that calories are in so much greater supply, I think we have something like, per person in the United States, we have available to us about 3,800 calories per person per day. I mean, that's twice as much as most of us need to eat, right? And that's about 1,000 calories more than were available to us 20 years ago. So food is abundant. All right, then we have the diet industry. And it is a $30 billion industry, and there are good people out there, but much of what you see and what is sold to you is founded on lies and half-truths that amount to lies because they confuse you and end up damaging your health. The diet industry encourages magical thinking. There will be a supplement, there will be an herb, there'll be some kind of a cool diet, and this will be the one that's going to solve my problem. It's going to make it easy. I'm going to be able to eat all I want and still lose weight. I'm going to be able to you know, just take a pill and everything's going to happen for me. So a lot of the diet industry is based on selling us the idea that there is a magical solution, and it really doesn't require any effort. It's just going to happen for you. Then we have fad diets, and I will talk more about that, that tend to leave us more discouraged than we were before because they are not sustainable. You cannot stick to them. You cannot make a transition from those diets to normal, healthy eating. And because you can't make, they don't teach you how to eat, you're going to regain the weight. I mean, this is statistically what happens. Something like 85 to 90% of people who lose weight regain it. Now, I don't want to make you think that regain is inevitable, because it isn't. I've written about that on my website. And there is an organization called the National Weight Control Database. Anybody heard of that? What it is a group of people whom scientists are studying who have successfully lost weight and maintained their weight loss. I think you have to have lost at least 30 pounds and kept it off for, I don't know, a year, 2 years, something like that. Scientists study these people to see what are they doing differently that helps them not regain the weight. And it's not rocket science. It's normal stuff. It's like walking, eating more vegetables, always eating breakfast, things like that. So, yes. You know, maintaining weight loss is possible, but it's difficult, and the diet industry preys on that because, let's face it, if you lose it and then regain it, and lose it, regain it, lose it, regain it, you're ready for buying the next product because you haven't solved your problem. Alrighty, after tonight's presentation, we'll have time for questions and answers, so if you think of anything, just jot it down or make a mental note, and then you can ask me stuff. Alright, point number one, calories don't count. Well, they do, actually. Fat loss is like gravity. It always works all the time. If you're living on the Earth, if you're up on the moon, that's different. But fat loss is governed by certain physical laws, just as we are governed by gravity. One of the laws of thermodynamics is that energy is neither created nor destroyed. What that means in your body is that you run on energy, you run on calories, that's the food energy that we take in, and you are a closed system, okay? You can't suddenly have more calories in your body than you consumed. You can't magically get rid of more calories than you have either taken from your fat stores or you have burned off through movement. You know, it's just, so yes, calories do count. It's like having a bank account. If you put more in, you don't need as much money as you have more money than you need, you put more money in the bank, you end up with a surplus. Yes, that's good in your bank account, and in your body the surplus is fat. And of course, if you spend more than you have, you're in a deficit. So don't ever let anybody tell you, no matter what convoluted arguments they're using, don't ever let anyone tell you that calories don't count, because that's the whole picture. Calories are it. We cannot get away from energy. That's what it's all about. The fat on our bodies is just stored energy, okay? Number two, certain foods make you fat. Okay, so I wish I had a dollar for every time that somebody said to me, well, carbohydrates are what's making everybody fat. And then they used to say, when I was first, you know, in my diet book buying heyday as a young person, well, fat is what makes you fat. So we should all eat dry baked potatoes and dry salad and dry chicken breasts, and it's fat that makes you fat. So unless you're eating too much fat, you just don't need to worry about it. Well, this relates to point number one. It's like saying that some foods have the ability to defy the laws of thermodynamics. Foods basically have calories in them. Fats have more calories, carbohydrates have fewer calories. No food, unless you are eating too many calories, has the ability to make you fat. Now, some things can make you healthier or less healthy. But I could eat, let's say my maintenance amount of calories that I need is 2,200 calories a day. I could eat 2,200 calories of pure fat, and I would not gain weight. I would feel bad, but I would not gain weight. I could eat 2,200 calories of pure sugar, and I would not gain weight. I would probably look like hell and feel like hell, but I would not gain weight. So, you know, it's like I said a minute ago, you could eat turnips or Twinkies or whatever, and it's all about energy balance. So there's nothing magical or demonic about any food, you know, whether it's high fructose corn syrup, you know, carbohydrates, white bread, potatoes, whatever. It's all about, you know, some foods have more health benefits than other foods, but it is not the composition of the food that makes you fat. It's the calories that are in the food. All right. Some diets suggest that you can eat as much as you want and still lose weight. Have you heard that one before? The first thing I think about when I hear that is Atkins. And I will talk about Atkins a little bit. Atkins says basically in the induction phase, you can eat all the protein and fat you want and you'll still lose weight. The point is that if you are eating more calories than you need, you will not lose weight on Atkins. Now, people who do low-carb diets tend to drop a lot of weight really quickly. Why is that? Okay, there are two reasons. First of all, let me do a little mini scientific explanation. Your body needs carbohydrates so much that it stores carbohydrate in your body in the form of glycogen in your liver and your muscles. And so if your blood sugar is running low from the food you've eaten, or you haven't eaten, your blood sugar's low, you will use your glycogen. When glycogen is stored in your body, it is accompanied by water. So 1 gram of glycogen is accompanied by 5 grams of water. You stop eating carbohydrates, you use up all the glycogen that's in your body because your brain runs on sugar. Your brain must have that sugar. So it's going to take it from your glycogen and then it's going to convert your fat and turn it into sugar through a complicated process because it's got to have sugar. But the point is you use up all your glycogen. Burn up 1 pound of glycogen, lose 5 pounds of water. Okay? So the instant weight loss that you see in the first couple of days on a low-carbohydrate diet, you are dumping your water because you've used up all your glycogen. Okay? So that's what's going on. There's another reason why a lot of people find Atkins a positive diet experience, and that is that protein, which is what Atkins is all about, is very satisfying. So they end up eating fewer calories. They end up being in a caloric deficit simply because the protein provides high satiety value. It works when it works, not because of the magic of not eating carbs. It works because you are automatically eating fewer calories because you are satisfied. So protein is high satiety food. That's important to remember if you are dieting because that's the nutrient that helps keep your blood sugar elevated, helps keep you mentally clear, helps keep you feeling good for you know, hours between meals. So it's not that there's anything magical about Atkins. There's a quick loss of water and there's the satiety value of all that protein. So when it works for people, it's because they've reduced their calories by eating, you know, because they're satisfied. The other phenomenon that I think of these days in the eat as much as you want and still lose weight realm is the idea that clean eating, if you eat healthy foods, if you eat, you know, whole unprocessed foods, you will automatically lose weight. And that's simply not true. That's a very healthful way to eat, but if you eat more calories than you need, you know, you're going to get fat. Or if you eat at maintenance level on a clean eating program, you'll maintain your weight, you'll be healthy, you'll probably feel terrific, but you're not going to lose weight just because you're eating clean, okay? So again, we can't get away from the laws of thermodynamics. Number four, you don't need to count calories. Well, that is true. You don't necessarily need to count calories, but you do need to reduce calories, okay? All the faddish diets that people go for, or almost all of them, are appealing to people because they think they do not want to count calories. I don't want to count calories. That's so awful. You know, it's a pain in the rear and it's going to take time. So instead, we are offered programs that say you don't have to count calories. And the point is, if that plan is in fact making you eat fewer calories than you need, yeah, it's going to work for you. So what I say is, as long as it's working for you, no, you don't have to count calories. But if it stops working for you, you might want to consider tracking what you eat. There are, I think, four benefits to weighing and measuring your food and to tracking your food intake if you find yourself at a plateau. Okay, if the diet's working for you, you hate counting calories, keep going, you know, got my blessing. But there are four reasons why I think it helps to track. One is tracking your calories and weighing and measuring your food totally removes the guesswork. You know exactly what you're eating. You know how much protein you're getting. You know how many calories you're getting. You can use a service like MyFitnessPal, Daily Burn, Spark People, Live Strong. There are all these free services out there that are really, really good, that make it so easy to track calories, much more easy than the days when you had to write it down in a notebook. And if you have access to a computer or even a cell phone app, you know, you've always got the program with you, so it's easy to keep track of what you're eating. So, takes out the guesswork, all right? People who do not track what they're eating, I'm talking about people who are dieting, not people who are just eating, you know, through normal life, eat more than they think they do. This is just a fact. It's just proven. We forget what we have eaten. I mean, I've done this myself. Let's say I'm trying to lose a couple of pounds. I wait till the end of the day to write down stuff, and I'm like, oh, I'm doing great. And then I go, oh, I forgot about that whatever I had. Well, that's just the way it goes. It is scientifically validated that people who track lose more weight than people who don't track, probably just because they are more aware of what they're eating. And the final reason why I advocate weighing, measuring, and tracking is that nobody estimates well, not even nutritionists. There are studies on this. Not even professional dietitians and nutritionists can estimate well the number of calories that are on their plate. They just don't do it. So if everything is working well for you, you're losing fat, you're feeling great, then fine, you don't need to count calories. But if you're at a plateau, then counting calories can be very useful. Number five, a diet is a short-term thing. In my opinion, a diet, if it is a good diet, is a food plan that teaches you how to eat forever. Which doesn't mean you don't have to reduce calories forever, but you know what to eat, you know how much you need to eat, and when you have lost the weight and you continue your healthy eating habits where you know what a correctly sized portion is, and you actually feel full on a correctly sized portion, you get accustomed to eating that. It is really true. But what happens when you have diets that have you eating screwy things is that they have not taught you how are you supposed to eat for the rest of your life. So you eat screwy things, you cut out all the bread and whatever, and then as soon as you fall off of it, you're like, oh my gosh, I gotta have a plate of pasta. You know, you haven't learned about portion control, you haven't learned about, you know, protein making you feel more satisfied, you haven't learned about the satiating value of vegetables. And along that subject, let me mention a book called Volumetrics, which is really, really good. It's written by a nutrition professor named, I think this is funny, Barbara Rolls. I think she's University of Pennsylvania, somewhere up there. But in any case, Volumetrics is about eating food that is higher in bulk, fiber, fruits, vegetables, foods cooked with water like soups or salads which have a lot of water. Those foods are more naturally satiating and they are low in energy density, which means you get a lot of food without a lot of calories. Really good book because it's so, what she outlines is so sensible and healthful. It's a terrific way to eat for anybody. It doesn't matter if you're trying to lose weight or not. So Volumetrics. And that's the kind of food plan that teaches you a way to eat that you can observe for a lifetime. Alrighty, how am I doing on time? I'm good. Okay, so a healthy fat loss diet is based on, as we've said, slightly reduced quantities of normal healthy food. It's not based on, I'm eating crazy things right now because I'm trying to reach my goal and then I can eat normally again. Well, you know what happens when you, first of all, you deprive yourself, you're starving yourself by not eating enough. You can't wait to be done with that diet. And so you have a reaction. You get back to normal food and you're not just eating normal portions. So a diet, okay, yeah, the reduction of calories, that is a short-term thing until we reach our goal weight and then maintain it with exercise too. But ideally it should be teaching us how to eat for a lifetime, because if it doesn't teach us those skills, it's not worth it. You know, there's no value in it whatsoever, because we're just going to gain that weight back. And most of the time when we regain weight that we've lost, we also gain a little more. So there's the 20 pounds we lost and change. You know, and we keep doing that, you know, every 4 or 5 years, 20 pounds and change, and it really adds up. All right. The next five myths all have to do with muscle. I hope that word isn't too scary. I hope that doesn't make you think of female hulks. Because in my opinion, the greatest disservice that the whole diet industry does is that it focuses solely on weight loss. You do not want to lose weight. You could cut off your head and lose weight. You remember when you were a kid, you heard that joke, you know, you want to know how to lose 20 pounds of ugly flab? Cut off your head. Seriously, I heard that when I was a kid. We don't want to lose weight. We want to lose fat. And we want to preserve our muscle. So the next five myths have to do with muscle. All right. Before I go into that, I want to talk about metabolism. Because this is key. This is crucial. What is metabolism? Metabolism is an expression of energy, units of energy. It's the amount of calories we need. And the two primary components of our daily metabolism are our basal metabolism. You may have heard that expression, basal metabolism. That's simply what it takes to run your body. Breathe air, pump your blood, your heart is working, your lungs are working, your stomach is digesting food. So it's just all your bodily processes. That's your basal metabolism. And that's the number that, if you were in a coma, just lying in a coma or asleep literally all day, that's your basal metabolism. That's the number of calories it takes to just live, no bodily movement at all. That's actually the biggest part of your metabolism, your daily energy need. The second part of it is the energy that's required for all bodily movement. And it's not just exercise, it's also standing, even sitting upright. You're having to use your skeletal muscles to do stuff, you know, hold your body in a particular position. So that's the second component of metabolism. There is a third component, which is called the thermic effect of food. Do you all know what that is? Have you heard that expression? It refers to the fact that it actually takes energy to digest that salad that you just had. And the protein takes more energy to digest than the carbs or the fat. So the thermic effect of food, yeah, you do burn a certain amount of calories digesting food. But the main thing is basal metabolism, that is 60 to 80% of your daily energy cost, depending on how active you are. And then the other part of it is, how much activity do you do? How much exercise? How much movement? So those are the numbers that go together to create your metabolism. Okay, so now that we've had that lesson, point number six, your metabolism is slower and there's nothing you can do about it. Do you think that's true?
No.
Good answer. The first part is true. Yes, your metabolism probably is slower. And the reason it's slower is that, the greatest reason why, is that when we turn about 35, that's about the age when we have reached our natural peak of bone density and muscle mass, okay? After that point, if we are not actively fighting the process, if we are sedentary, we are losing about 5% of our muscle mass per decade after that. So that is the decline that turns a vigorous 40-year-old woman into an 85-year-old who cannot rise from a chair because she doesn't have enough muscle strength in her legs, okay? So yes, your metabolism is slower unless you have been very active physically because you have lost muscle mass, and it is also slower if you have ever done any crash dieting with very low calories, because you don't just lose fat, in that weight you lost is also muscle. And that is a disaster, not because it's irreversible, but because it's hard to correct, and it is, if not corrected, kind of a downward spiral. You do a crash diet, let's say you lose 20 pounds, maybe 5 or 10 pounds of that is muscle. So you're fatter than you were. Once you regain, you are fatter than you were before, much fatter, because you've lost that muscle tissue. So your metabolism is slower. So what we have to do is make sure that our activity preserves our muscle mass, builds muscle mass to help restore what we have lost from sedentary living and the aging process. And we want to make sure that we do not lose any muscle through what we're eating. If we're dieting, we also want to make sure, even if we're not dieting, that we consume enough protein. I'm not even going to really get into that tonight because it's a complicated subject. But if all we eat all day is fruits and vegetables and grains and, you know, one little cup of yogurt, you know, and we think, oh, well, that's got lots of protein in it. That's not enough protein, and that endangers your muscles too. So, point I'm trying to make is that loss of muscle equals slower metabolism, okay? It can be corrected, but it's tough. Okay, point number seven. You don't need to exercise when you diet. You just need to cut your calories. Well, it is true that you can lose weight if you are not exercising, but as we've just said, you could be endangering your muscle. If you're not using it, you're more likely to lose it. Dieting can be interpreted by the body as starvation, which is another reason why I'm a very big proponent of slow and steady. One of the reports that's in the packet I'm going to give you tonight talks about how to know how many calories to cut when you are dieting. And there's actually, it depends on how big you are to start with and some other factors, but basically cutting a lower percentage of calories is more likely to preserve your muscle mass, because your body doesn't so much think, hey, I'm starving. You know, and why wouldn't your body, if it thinks you're starving, why wouldn't it just use up all the fat? Because the fat is the preferred tissue to keep you alive. 9 calories per gram of fat on your body, only 4 calories per gram of protein, which is your muscle. Okay, so your body's like, okay, we can gut some of this protein supply, because we got to have the fat. That's the last thing we want to let go of, because it'll stretch, it'll last longer. So this is our survival tissue. There is a limit to how lean you can become, because there is essential fat that your body will not let go of, no matter what. So when you diet, if you diet too intensively, your body says, dang, you know, we're starving. We're gonna reduce our metabolic rate. We're gonna slow down bodily processes, and we're also gonna start eating up that muscle tissue. So how can we prevent that starvation response? We can exercise, okay? Especially we can do strength training. We can do shorter, more intense workouts. I'll talk about cardio in a minute, so I don't want to go into that. We can make sure that our calories are not too low. We can make sure we're getting enough protein. And we can do a thing called the zigzag, which is calorie rotation. That is explained in another one of those reports. In a nutshell, what the zigzag is let's say I'm trying to lose 5 pounds. So I'm going to reduce my calories 3 days in a row, and on the fourth day I'm going to eat at maintenance level. That just has there's no scientific evidence on it, but it seems to work, and it makes sense. So basically on that day when you're eating at a normal level, you're not going to lose fat, but you're going to put some more glycogen into your muscles, which means the next time you go into the gym, you're going to feel better. It's a psychological relief. You're like, I'm having lunch with my girlfriends on Friday. That's going to be my maintenance day so that I can eat a little more. I'm not going to worry about it. So the zigzag is, that's something that comes from the bodybuilding world, and it's a really good strategy. So myth number 7, yes, you do need to exercise and protect your muscles. All right. Number 8, your weight is all that really counts. Well, we've talked a little bit about this, but the scale does not tell the whole truth. Anybody here watch The Biggest Loser? I do.
Yes.
I do. A guilty pleasure. It's such a good soap opera. You know, there's all this drama. And
I sit down there and watch it as I'm eating all
this. Yeah, who's going to get voted out? You know, what's going to happen? Who's going to get mad at who?
Bring through confession time.
Yeah.
I just ran into Anton Davis.
Did you?
In Krispy Kreme.
No way.
And he had 12 donuts. I had 2, of which I ate 9, and he said he was eating none as well. So we.
Zero. Oh, I believe you, but I want to know why he was buying those donuts.
He looked fabulous, and he was just the nicest man in the world.
Did you say Anton?
I said, I love you.
I love you.
He gave me a hug, and I came up literally his arm.
Yeah, I bet you did.
Seriously.
Yeah, that is too funny.
Krispy Kreme.
Okay, so The Biggest Loser reinforces the idea that weight is what matters. Oh, I lost 7 pounds. Yay, I'm so happy. But we don't know what it was. How much of that was muscle? How much of that was fat? We don't know. So scale does not tell the whole story. We tend to have an emotional response to the scale. It's that number that says, I'm going to be happy today. I'm down 5 pounds. Woohoo! Or I'm up 2 pounds. Ah, you know. But we could have gained 2 pounds of muscle, which means I am leaner than I was before. We could have lost 5 pounds, and 3 of it could have been muscle. And instead of going woohoo, we should be going, oh my gosh, I need to change something in my plan, because I'm losing muscle mass. So how do you know whether what your body fat level is? There's actually a very simple, you can do it in complicated, cool ways. You can get into a bod pod, which is a device that Sherry has used. You can have a trainer at your gym use calipers, but I will say calipers are only as good as the hand of the person wielding them. Unless a person has a ton of experience doing caliper measurements, they are not as accurate as they should be. You know, if that guy's got 10 years of experience doing calipers, then he's probably pretty good. If it's a newbie, but there is a free and very easy way to get a pretty good estimate using a calculator that's available for free on my website, and a tape measure. And you put in a couple of measurements. It's called the Navy way. This was developed by the U.S. Navy. And it gives a pretty good estimate of your body fat percentage. And what's good about that is it's not as accurate as underwater weighing, which is the gold standard, but it's a heck of a lot more convenient, and it will tell you over time, last month my body fat level was 27%, and now it's 25%. You know you're doing well. You know, and my lean body mass is, 105 pounds. Now it's 106 pounds. That's good. So calculations like that are much more valuable because we know what is the composition of my body. You know, I could weigh 20 pounds less than I do. Somebody could be like me and weigh 20 pounds less and be a lot fatter because she doesn't have as much muscle mass as I do. So the scale is not everything. I want to tell you a horror story about the HCG diet. Please, please do not ever, ever, ever do this. HCG diet, if you don't know, it's this ridiculous starvation plan that involves you eating somewhere between 500 and 800 calories a day, which is starvation, way, way lower than anyone should ever go. Never go below your basal metabolic rate and your daily calories. Never, never, never. So you have this starvation diet, and then it has the added plus of either injections or drops, oral drops, of a pregnancy hormone called HCG. Now, there's no scientific evidence that it does anything positive whatsoever, and there's a lot of evidence that it's very dangerous. And Dr. Oz is telling you to do it, which is why I have no respect for him and will never listen to another word he ever says. I know a trainer in Maryland, a very good trainer, who had a client who wanted to do the HCG diet. She warned her against it. She did it anyway. And so Pamela, my friend the trainer, had measured this woman. She knew what her lean body mass was before she did the diet. So then she does the diet. She comes back. She says, I've lost 10 pounds. She had lost 1 pound of fat and 9 pounds of muscle. 9 pounds. Do you know how long it takes a woman to add 9 pounds of muscle? Could be a year, 2 years. That is horrible. Every pound of muscle you have burns about an extra 10 calories a day. It doesn't sound like much, but 9 pounds of muscle means, hey, all of a sudden she's burning 90 fewer calories every single day. 90 calories a day over the course of a year is almost 10 pounds of fat that you would gain. So even if nothing else changed, she's fatter than she was before, her metabolism is slower, and she's almost guaranteed to gain weight unless she does something to rebuild that muscle mass. So it is a disaster. And I'm singling that out because I know the numbers for that example, because someone I know did the measurements. But all very low calorie diets pose the same dangers, okay? It is not worth it because you end up fatter. So please don't ever fall for that. All right. Myth number 9, do as much cardio as possible. Okay, I don't want to diss cardio because cardio is obviously wonderfully healthy for you. It is great for burning calories, but you can do too much. Also, cardio cannot do everything for you. Cardio will not, generally speaking, add muscle to your body. Your body is very adaptive to the demands that you put on it. Look at, for example, a picture of an elite marathoner and a picture of an elite sprinter. Look at their body types. The marathoner needs to be light, like a bird, light. The body is going to resist adding any extra weight. It's going to burn fat, yes, absolutely. It is not going to build muscle. The sprinter, what he does is an anaerobic activity, or she does, that is based on shorter, more intense workouts, and that man or woman has beautiful, rounded, curvy muscles. Well, I can tell you, their basal metabolisms are very different. The marathoner, sure, that person burns a jillion calories out there exercising, but when they're both lying in bed at night asleep, the guy with the muscle is the one who's burning the calories. Okay, so cardio will not, it can preserve your bone mass, absolutely, if you're running or doing some other impact activity. And it can, to a certain extent, preserve your muscle mass, but it will not build muscle. There is a phenomenon called excess post-exercise oxygen consumption. We can just call it afterburn. Let's call it that. That's a lot faster than saying that whole long term. And what that is the fact that you burn more calories after you finish doing certain kinds of exercise. So let's say I go to the gym and I really knock it out. I'm really, you know, working intensively on strength training, or I'm doing some high intensity cardio, some intervals in my cardio. My calorie afterburn after those higher intensity exercises is much higher than if I'd done cardio. Okay, so the calories burned during the activity are not the whole story. You have to think, what I like to think of is as a key principle is never endanger muscle. That's a principle, that's number one. So when I'm working out, I want to build muscle and never endanger muscle. Very long cardio workouts have a tendency to waste muscle because, again, your body is stressed by that activity. Generally speaking, unless you are training for an endurance event like a marathon, a triathlon, something like that, do not exercise longer than 90 minutes at a time because your body starts breaking down protein, muscle, as fuel. Between 3 to 18% of the calories your body consumes after 90 minutes will come from your muscle, okay? And you don't want that. You definitely don't want your muscle tissue being used as energy. That's any kind of activity. You just don't, you know, if you're a marathoner, of course you have to go on long runs. That's just part of your deal. But if you're going to go on those long workouts, make sure that you are well fed, okay? Because again, you don't want more than one starvation factor coming in. If you are already depleted, you know, you're not eating enough, you're not resting enough, and you're going to do a two-hour workout, that's three things that are working against you, okay?
Is that 90 minutes in one day or just at one time?
At a time, continuous.
Okay, so you can do like...
You could, yes. Like, what it is a bodily stress. Okay, so it's that 90 minutes continuous.
So if you work out in the morning and you eat a protein bar before you go to the gym in the morning, is that not enough?
Yeah, 90 minutes is about the cutoff. That's okay if you are also well nourished. You know, if you're getting enough protein, you know, if you're monitoring your protein, you're getting enough calories. What you don't want to do is put your body in a starvation stress. Okay. And a lot of people talk about doing fasted cardio in the morning. I am not a big fan of fasted cardio because I don't want to encourage my body to start breaking down what I want to keep, okay? So the protein bar, that's good, but it's not just about what you eat before the workout. It's, are you well nourished in general? Are you eating enough throughout the day? You know, is your calorie level sufficient? So. So anyway, okay, let me mention one other point about cardio. You all remember seeing on aerobic machines something that suggests when you work out at this level, you are in the fat burning zone. You know what I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm.
What that is the idea that the predominant fuel source at this particular relatively low intensity cardio burns more fat than carbs. This is true. The lower intensity the activity, the higher percentage fat is used as an energy source. The reason is that when you are working at a high intensity, you've got to have the fuel now. You can't process fat like that. You can only process sugar now. Okay, so when you're lying in bed at night, you are burning more fat than carbs because it is a very low intensity thing. You're just lying there. That is not necessarily something you want to try to be in at the gym. Why? Okay, I could work out for an hour in this relatively low, you know, doing slow, steady state cardio in the fat burning zone, but if instead I wanted to do 30 minutes of high intensity activity, I would actually, number one, burn more calories during the activity. And that's what it's all about. It doesn't matter where those calories come from, because if I'm in an energy deficit at the end of the day, I'm going to burn fat. Doesn't matter. Let's say I'm burning 400 calories in my high intensity time, or 300 calories, and, you know, 250 calories doing the steady state cardio. Okay, the other one is a win. The other reason that the higher intensity exercise is a win is because of the afterburn we talked about. okay? If I go in there and I do some cardio intervals and I really slam the weights, I'm going to get a better afterburn. So the fat burning zone is not something, I mean, if you want to do low intensity steady state cardio, that's absolutely fine, but don't delude yourself into thinking that is going to make you lean, that there's something magic about that, because it's not about what you're burning as a fuel source during the exercise, it's about how many calories you're burning overall. Does that make sense?
Because it's burning
calories. Okay, you don't have to worry about where it's coming from. If at the end of the day, as I say, if you are in a calorie deficit, it's going to come from fat ultimately.
Okay.
So, you know, your body's running on both fuels all the time, all the time. You're always burning some sugar. You're always burning some fat, with whatever you're doing, because that's just the way your body works. There is nothing you can do that burns only one kind. It's always a mix. It's just that if I'm just walking, you know, doing stuff like this, real low intensity, I'm burning predominantly fat or a greater proportion of fat. And if I'm really, you know, just like racing my heart out on you know, a treadmill, or I'm you know, doing real intense weightlifting or some other activity like that, I'm going to burn proportionately more sugar because I got to have it now. It's just the energy pathway that your body needs. So you don't have to care about what you're burning. It's just how many calories. That's the bottom line about that. All right. Number 10. You'll know how this one goes. Slash more calories out of your diet to lose fat faster. No. We already talked about the Biggest Loser fallacy. There is a limit to how fast you can safely lose fat and preserve your muscle. Okay? There are serious drawbacks to very low calorie dieting. Very low calorie dieting is actually a scientific term, and it basically means it's in the realm of the HCG diet. It's like 500, 800 calories a day. And what researchers have found, number one, you can't stick to them. We talked about that. Number two, you lose muscle. Researchers have found that your hormones, your appetite regulating hormones, get screwed up by these diets as long as a year afterward. There are two hormones that work in tandem, ghrelin and leptin, and I always have to check my notes to remember which one is which, but one suppresses appetite and one increases appetite. Well, the one that suppresses appetite is reduced after very low calorie dieting, and dieting, and the one that increases appetite is increased. So your body, up to a year afterward, is not operating normally. You are not back in homeostasis. You have not returned to normal. So very likely you've lost a bunch of muscle, so your metabolism is slower. Your hormones are screwed up, which makes you feel hungrier because your body is saying, feed me. Feed me. You have starved me, and I want food because I want to survive. When the next famine comes, I want to be living at the end of it, okay? So there is just, you cannot get something for nothing. There's just no way to do it fast, 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 and have it be healthy. What I like to say is that the slow way is the fast way. And what I mean by that is, let's take two people, okay? So we've got, you know, okay, Bonnie. Okay, so we'll just, it's not you, it's somebody whose name is also Bonnie. And then someone else whose name is also Francis. So the other Bonnie decides to do a crash diet, and she loses 20 pounds really fast, and a lot of it's muscle. And then she starts eating the way she was before, because she's all hungry and, you know, her metabolism is slower. She ends up putting on 25 pounds, okay? So at the end of 6 months or 9 months, she actually weighs 5 pounds more than she did before, okay? So the other person named Frances did it the slow way. She wanted to lose 20 pounds also, but she was shooting for a fat loss of about 1 pound a week. Well, in that 6 months of doing it slowly and sensibly and not starving herself, she's lost the 20 pounds. She's learned a new way to eat. Presumably she's created an exercise habit that she can stick to. So at the end of 6 months, the other Bonnie is 5 pounds fatter, and the other Frances is down 20 pounds. So which way was faster? Yeah, because that's the way that gives you a much greater chance of a permanent fat loss solution. So there's no way to do it fast without bad repercussions. So I know, you know, we get impatient. There's a date coming up. You know, we've got a party to go to. We've got a, you know, our 30-year reunion. We've got this or that. And so we want to look groovy. And I think it's more important to buy a nice new dress and just be satisfied that, you know, yeah, I am doing this the smart way. I'm losing fat at about a pound a week. Now, if you are bigger, if you have more to start with when you begin, you can probably lose about 2 pounds of fat safely per week. But as a person gets smaller, that, you know, we should be more conservative. The report that I will hand out explains that, you know, the reasons for being more conservative in your fat loss deficit. And I don't think you can ever go wrong by being more conservative because you because it's so important to preserve your muscle mass. All right, I've laid a bunch of stuff on you. So let's do Q&A. What questions do you have, or are you all just going to go, what? Totally, you were so confusing that you've mystified me. Yes.
Just back to the last point.
Yeah.
Is there a rule of thumb, or does it depend on where the person is? Don't cut more than 20% of your calorie. Don't cut more than 30. Don't cut more than 15. Is there one rule, or is it depend on a lot of other factors?
Generally speaking, a conservative deficit would be 10 to 20%, and a more aggressive deficit would be like 25 to 30, and the fat loss report explains that. But yeah, it depends on, you know, if I were super, super healthy, I was doing a lot of strength training, I might experiment with taking a more aggressive fat loss, and I would at the same time monitor what's going on with my body fat percentage and my lean mass so that I know if I see, whoops, I have lost a pound of muscle or 2 pounds or something like that, then I'm going to say, well, I'm going to back off a little bit. So yeah, there are some guidelines. And basically, like a small person like you, conservative, 15%, you know.
HRG or whatever that
HCG,
guy is, probably you're cutting 60. Oh,
much more than that. I mean, if you're going to 500 calories a day and let's say your maintenance level is 2,000,
okay.
Mm-hmm. I'm not the best mathematician, but that's bad juju right there. So yeah, so there are some rules that the document explains. Yeah.
How do you know how much protein you ought to have?
Very good question. There are different opinions, and I've written several blog posts about this. So if you go to my site and Google, primefit.org. Primefit.org. It's Prime Fitness for Women. Wish I had a .com, but I would have had to pay like $3,000 to the smart person who already, you know, registered it. So it's like, nope, I'll stick with .org. So primefit.org. And if you search for protein on the site, you'll see 3 or 4 posts. I would say I am a person, I don't go around just slamming the nutritional establishment willy-nilly, because much of the time it has good things to say. But I think most of the literature indicates that for athletes and anybody who exercises regularly, you can consider yourself an athlete, okay, needs more protein than the recommended daily allowance. There have been some really fascinating studies done lately. One that I wrote about not too long ago. This was an overfeeding study, and it was very tightly controlled scientifically, because these people were literally living in this center, and everything they ate was given to them, so we knew exactly how much they were eating. And they were being overfed to see what would happen to their body composition. Well, of course they all gained weight. But the people, really interesting, the people who received the lowest percentage of protein, I can't remember what the percentage was, even though they were being overfed, they lost muscle. They lost muscle because they were receiving so little protein. That was a bombshell. Just amazing. And that, to me, says, okay, if I am eating a low-protein diet and I am getting more calories than I need, in other words, no starvation stimulus, what is going to happen to me when I am cutting 300 or 400 or 500 calories out of my diet? most of in one of those articles on the site, I tell you what the American Dietetics Association says, and then I tell you what the National Strength and Conditioning Association says, which is my certifying organization, very reputable, very knowledgeable, especially about strength training. And the recommendation for protein for active people is much higher. It's closer to like 0.8 grams per pound of body weight, and that is very close to the old bodybuilder rule, which is 1 gram per pound of body weight. Now it depends on, you know, a lot of things, but generally speaking, unless you have a kidney disease or something like that, some medical condition which says you should not eat a whole lot of protein. Generally speaking, eating more protein has a lot of benefits because we talked about satiety, makes you feel full longer. I get protein in every single meal and snack. I will not eat something that doesn't have protein in it. I won't have just an apple for a snack. I'll have an apple and a piece of string cheese or, you know, something else that's a combination of protein and carbs and maybe some fat. So satiety keeps you satisfied. The thermic effect of protein, it costs more calories to digest protein, so it kind of shaves a few calories off what you actually ate. Okay, so that's kind of cool. And the muscle preservation. So, and also the fact that if you are doing strength training, you need that protein for the repair and growth of muscle tissue. So I would like to err on the side, on the high side. But as I say, the website gives you real numbers. So, a lot of people these days talk about nutrient composition, and, people will say, well, I like, I'm trying to think, what were the figures in the, anybody ever do the Zone diet? Zone was complicated, so complicated. I think he wanted you to do something like 30% protein, which is a little high even for me. 40% carbs and 30% fat. Well, most sports nutritionists will say you should be getting about 50 to 60% of your calories from carbs. And then you take what you have left and you decide how much of this do I want in protein, how much of this do I want in fat. It's very hard to eat less than 20% fat. It's hard, and you lose a lot of flavor. So I shoot for something like 25 protein, 25 fat, and 50% carbs. That works well for me. There is individual variation. You know, you may find that you do better with a little fewer, you know, grams of carb or a little bit more, and you can play with how you feel. But the protein, I think, that's really important. So what else? Question-wise. Give me some real tough ones. See if I can answer them.
When you say cutting calories, how many calories is that based on? Because, I mean, a lot of people eat more calories than... So if you say, like, cut 15% of your calories, how many calories is that?
Right. What's it? Very good question. What you have to do first is you have to figure out, what is my maintenance level? And there is a calculator on my website. It's free. That tells you how to estimate your daily caloric need, and it's based on, there's also a formula in one of the reports I'm going to give you. If you know your lean body mass, you can use the slightly more complicated formula. But the one on the website is very simple. It's based on your weight, I think your age, and then an activity factor. So you tell it, you know, how many times, it asks you, you know, to check a box for how many times a week you exercise, how active you are. And it ranges from sedentary, which is, you know, virtually nothing, to extremely active, like training several times a day, or you do a job that requires manual labor all day long, something like that. So essentially what that calculator is doing is that it's estimating your basal metabolism and then the activity. Remember, we talked about how metabolism is basically mostly those two things, basal metabolism, how much activity you do. So once you know, okay, this is my maintenance level, I need 2,400 calories a day or whatever, depending on how active I am, then you take a percentage off of that to say, okay, I want to lose 5 pounds, but I want to do this very conservatively because I don't want to endanger my muscle mass. I'm going to do it the safe, slow, smart way. So I'm going to take 15%, figure out what is 15% of 2,400, and that's the amount of calories I'm going to subtract. So that's the way that works. So it's all based on what is my maintenance. And then if you decide you want to do the zigzag, you know, okay, let's say your caloric reduction day would be 2,000 or something. So you do 2,000, 2,000, 2,000, and then 2,400. So 3 days, or could be 2 days, could be 4 or 5, whatever you want to do, and then your maintenance day.
Yeah,
said that people who track their eating and their calories and everything are more successful. Do you know of a good app?
Yes. The Daily Burn service that I use also has a really good app. Sherry, does Fitness Pal have an app? I was thinking they did.
My Fitness Pal.
Spark People, I'm pretty sure they have an app too. I think any of those, probably Livestrong has an app. So I would just, you know, check that out. But yeah, I know of several good options. And they really are easy to use. And the thing that's great about those services, I may have said this already, is that not only do they tell you how many calories you're eating, but they give you a very quick take on, okay, how many grams of protein have I had today? And Daily Burn, I don't know about the others, also gives me my macronutrient breakdown. So it says, okay, you've had 50% carbs, you've had 25% protein, you've had 25% fat, so I know, hey, I'm right where I wanted to be. And it says you've had 12 grams of fiber and you really are supposed to be getting 25 or whatever, you know. And it says you've had 4 servings of vegetables and, you know, shoot for a couple more. So it's really gives you a lot of good information.
Which one is that?
This is dailyburn.com. So so it's great even if you're not trying to lose weight. You know, it's just for if you want to monitor your diet and see, you know, how well am I doing? Am I getting what I need? That's a pretty good tool. So, yeah. What else? Other questions?
I have a question, and this isn't really for women over 40. It's something you mentioned that triggered something. My daughter is almost 25. Mm-hmm. She went from being a server, where she was on her feet, carrying heavy trays, to a big girl job, where she sits all day long with a headset.
Right.
And in 1 year, she's gained 30 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
When she started the job, she says, Mom, all these people are really big. So what you said about being around people who were overeating and big.
Right.
She's going through all kinds of tests right now. She was convinced and convinced her doctor that her thyroid was messed up, but everything is coming back normal.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad you brought that up because that there's a sitting disease. That's a term that researchers are using these days. And basically it means that sitting on our butt all day is basically killing us. There's been some really interesting research on what's called non-exercise activity thermogenesis, which the acronym for that is much easier, NEAT. And what NEAT is how much you fidget, stand, walk, just stuff like that. And if I were your daughter, the first thing I'd be trying to do would be, okay, she's got a headset, right? Mm-hmm. So she, is it mobile? I mean, can she walk around a little bit?
I don't know. I don't think so. I think she has a headset and a screen.
Yeah,
she monitors security systems.
So I would, the first thing I would do if I were tethered to that desk is I would stand up more. Mm-hmm. I'd stand up more. Because people who... really interesting research on the fact that people who are overweight tend to sit like 2 hours more a day than people who are of normal weight. And you can literally burn in the amount of, you know, the people who are the fidgeters and the stand up, walk around a lot, can literally burn 200 to 300 calories more a day just doing that.
Mm-hmm.
So probably there's some stuff going on with the office kitchen. Maybe people bring in donuts and stuff, but some of it is just being seated all the time. So if I were in a situation where I were trapped to a, you know, chained to a desk like that, I would just try to stand as much as possible. When I take my break, I would walk around, climb the stairs, you know, something like that, because that's a very tough situation. I mean, it's almost impossible not to gain weight if you're forced to sit on your butt. Thanks for listening to the presentation. I hope you enjoyed it. Remember that you can find lots more information about healthy fat loss, fitness, and body transformation over 40 at my website, primefitnessforwomen.com. This is Mary Weaver, signing off.